And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting today will be Jan Chenez, Emilio Danello, and Steve Lydiot should be joining us shortly. This episode, we're going to be discussing the disappointing 2-1 loss for Fulham against Brighton Hove Albion Monday at Craven Cottage. We have much to get through, but before we do anything, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show. First, Giannis, how are you doing up in Canada, my friend?
I'm bloody cold. I'm glad the Christmas and New Year is over so that we can wait for our dreaded credit card bills and throw the cat at walls about all the money we spent on gifts on relatives that we can't stand and we only meet once a year. So
very funny there, my friend. Okay. Emilio, how are you doing? You were at the match with Monday with Steve, and like I mentioned, Steve hopefully should be joining us shortly. How are you doing?
I'm good. Happy New Year, Russ. Happy New Year, Giannis.
Happy New Year.
Not as cold here. Well, it's not particularly warm here in London, but it's that's what football's all about. I love this time of year. You wrap yourself up, you freeze your backsides off, and you know you can watch a bit of football. You know, weekends, midweek games. That's what football's all about, especially at Christmas. We've got back-to-back games. But yeah, looking forward to doing the show. And it's a shame that we can't celebrate the 3 points, but there's lots to discuss today. So I'm looking forward to it.
Hurrah! No, listen, there is a good amount to discuss, my friend. And let me start with you. I'm gonna start with you. Let's talk about the match on Monday. You were there with Steve. Like I said, Steve hopefully will be coming in very soon. But just share with me your overall view of what you watched there. Like you said, it's a disappointing 2-1 loss. Believe it or not, it's very similar to how the match against Brighton went the first time. I know the goals came at different times, but still, this team is so difficult to beat, and they figured out a way to win. That's the only way I can describe it, Emilio. How would you describe this 2-1 loss and how Brighton played?
You know, it's disappointing, but the game was very enthralling. I thought it was an enthralling game. You know, we certainly asked Brighton a lot of questions. We made them look very average, especially in the first half, but this Brighton team, and I was saying to Steve on Monday, reminds me of the Leicester City of last year winning the Premier League. You know, they're at their strongest when they go behind, and especially, and they scored most of their goals in the second half. And we can go through that later in the game. But, you know, I think there are a lot of positives to take out of the game. You know, we lost, but, you know, we did ask questions. We did put them under a lot of pressure. We lacked that little bit of quality, that final ball at times. And maybe it proved that maybe the squad isn't as strong as maybe we would like to think. And there's just a couple more additions and we're not far away from being a good top six side. But I think there's a lot of positives to take out of that game despite the loss. And we can compete against these teams. Last season, we would have lost that game 3-1 or 4-1. But this year, we narrowly lost and undeservedly lost a game. So, you know, disappointing, but I'm taking a lot of positives from the game. And if we can reinforce and strengthen this transfer window, then there's some optimism there for the next 3 or 4 months. And we've got a reasonable amount of games to pick up good 3-4 wins in the spin. We're back in that playoff spot. But we lose the next 3 or 4 games or don't win in the next 4 games, and you could potentially write off the season. So a key few weeks coming up. But overall, good atmosphere, great crowd, biggest crowd since the Premier League. And, you know, it was great to be part of that.
Okay, excellent. Well, it's like Steve's with us. Steve, welcome back to Cottage Talk.
Can you hear me now, Russ?
I can hear you now, Steve. How you doing?
Oh, not bad. Sorry, I just had to plug the headphones in. They slipped out for some reason. So, fantastic. Yeah, I'm great. I've just about got technology working. I feel about 87 years old tonight. But never mind. We got there in the end.
Okay, very good. I'm glad that you could join us there, Steve. I was just going through the other guys, just introducing Giannis, getting the thoughts of Emilio from the match. You watched the match with Emilio. Just give me your opening thoughts of what you watched on Monday.
I've caught the back end of what Emilio said, and I think he's right in a lot of it. Unfortunately, Giannis, I did miss what you said earlier on, trying to get on. Potentially, I think, again, you guys might have already covered it. I think potentially we've dropped 3 points again. I know it's harsh to say dropped against the league leaders, but I think that's pretty much, I guess, how a lot of us probably feel after that. Same familiar story, sort of dominating the game but dropped it. But again, I guess that's a positive as well in a roundabout way. If there was one small thing I did pick up is at times we used to talk about Scott Parker being in the middle of the park and slowing things down. I did think at times we were quite slow in the build-up. So that was, I guess, my only negative to how it was.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, we're going to get into this in just a bit, but I have to go back to Giannis, you and I watched the replay. What are your thoughts about what you watched here?
It's a cracking game of football. It really, really was. And Emilio's right. They very much are like Leicester City from last year.
It's a good comparison.
Good teams find ways to get it done, even when they're up against the cosh, even if they're not playing at 100. And both games we've played really well against them. And they're a good side. I've said it before. I think Chris Hughton's the best manager in the division. And I still believe that Brighton are going to win the division. But I think we're really, really close. And at 1-0 up, we had them in all sorts of trouble. But they found a way to come back. And that's a sign of a very, very good side. And you look at their lineup, they're not, you know, they've got a couple of very good players, but they're not, you know, they're not the most scary lineup, but collectively they're a very, very good team. And, you know, we can, as Amelia said, we can take some positives into the next game. I think the next 2 weeks are critical though, Russ, in terms of, you know, transfer window just being opened and seeing what signings we can get in.
Very good point about that. And we're certainly going to be talking about the January transfer window in upcoming episodes. All right, guys, before we go back and just focus on the starting 11, I just want to just share some quotes from the managers. And Emilio and Steve, I'm going to give each one of you a manager. So I'm going to start with you, Emilio. I'm going to give you some quotes from Chris Hughton. This is after the match. I got these quotes from skysports.com. This is from the Brighton and Hove Albion manager. It's very interesting what he had to share. I want to get your thoughts on it. Quote, "We probably didn't deserve to win, but we showed enough. There are periods in the game where Fulham look very good. It is very difficult when you're playing a team as expansive as they are. You have to make sure you don't allow them opportunities to play. We found it difficult, but we came away with the best chance in the first half, but we needed a goalkeeper who was very good today. And sometimes those ingredients win you games." Okay, Amelia, what do you make of the comments from Chris Hughton? Obviously, he's talking about the play of David Stockdale there.
Absolutely. And, you know, at the end of the day, it was good to see David Stockdale getting a warm welcome from the fans. Great save from the penalty. Again, it's 5 penalties now we've missed, you know, at home this season. You know, that's
terrible.
It's terrible statistics. So, long live Danny Murphy. Let's get him back, please. And maybe get him back as a substitute just to come on to take penalties, for goodness sake. But, on a serious note, though, Chris Hughton is, you know, I agree with Yanis. He probably is the best manager in this division. Very honest in his appraisal. I think we were the better team, certainly in the first half, with 65+ possession. So again, a lot of possession, a lot of build. I agree with Steve, we were a little bit slow in the build up in the first half. But David Stockdale did what he had to do, save a weak penalty, in my opinion. But you know, you still have to save them. You still have to dive the right way. And he did that. But overall, don't disagree with Chris Hughton. They did deserve the win. But as Yanis said, they grinded out a win. They came from behind for the umpteenth time this season. That's what Leicester City did.
Good teams do that, Emilio.
You know, 2 goals in a minute, but they've got a penalty. They scored from it. We had the chance.
That's right.
Failed. So we're not quite there yet. But this is a Brighton team that's had 2 years to build a squad, a togetherness, and they're doing what Leicester City did very well last year: concede very little and nick goals here and there, and that wins you games. Or possession doesn't necessarily win you games, as we've seen time and time again this season.
Okay, very good there, my friend. You know, I know we're going to be focusing a lot on Fulham, but I think to really talk about this match, we also have to talk about Brighton and how they're doing this, because this is a pattern. This is how they did it the last time Fulham played, and this is how they're doing it each and every week. They're just finding ways to win. Good teams do that. And they're very opportunistic. They take advantage of their opportunities, and that's the bottom line there. And that's, you know, it's a fine line. The margin here is not that much different between Fulham and Brighton Hove Albion, but they are able to get over the line. We need to get that extra 10% that Mike Redd keeps talking about. All right, Steve, over to you. I'm going to give you the head coach reaction, the quotes from Slavisa after the match. I want to get your thoughts on it. We're just going to focus on what he said about the match. So here are quotes on the head coach reaction that was on the Fulham website. Quote, "I believe we played very close to our maximum level. The squad has done a great job. They're working very hard, but in the end, we didn't find any compensation for this effort. More or less, I have to be happy with our performance. I believe we are very close to our maximum level. If we want to push ourselves a little bit higher, we have to use this transfer window, which is in front of us." So obviously he had to mention that as well. And then there are other quotes about the Chris Martin situation, but I just wanted to focus on the ones that were really about the match. All right, Steve, what are your thoughts about these quotes from Slavisa?
He's pretty much hit the nail on the head in the last part of the quote, really. it's all about the players. I think he's right to say we're close, close to maximum potential. The only thing that obviously does worry me is we can't reach that maximum potential because we don't quite have the players to do that. And like I said, in the end of the quotes, he has hit the nail on the head, really.
Yeah, and I just want to add one other quote that goes along with us, Steve. It started with us. We played very good football and dominated for many minutes, but we started to have problems on the field. We didn't find enough quality solutions, and they started to press us a little bit more strongly and be a little bit more solid, and they found a way to score two goals. And that's, Steve, that's what it's about. That's what you guys watched there. They just found a way to score those two goals. They took advantage of their opportunities, and that to me seems just to be the difference between the two teams. You know, listen, I can go through the stats. We outplayed them if you look at all the stats, but in the end, it's the only stat that matters is 2-1.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly that. And the guys will probably ratify that too. And you've got to take your chances. I mean, if the penalty goes in, you know, we're 2-0 up at that point. And I think me and Emilio were saying the most they're getting out of that is a draw. Probably yeah. The game's finished at that point. And unfortunately, you know, I believe we missed something like 5 out of 6 of our penalties. Now, really, it should be the other way around if you're looking to have any chance of getting higher.
No, listen, I agree with you. You know, it's funny. Emilio brought up Steve, Danny Murphy. Think about all the penalties that Danny Murphy took and changed matches. You have to score those. You have to score at least some of them. It's bad, but those are the fine lines there, because again, on the flip side, you have Tomer Hamed getting the equalizer on a penalty. Okay. That's really the difference here. And then of course they have the follow-up goal, but still, it's not that much difference between the teams, except they're much more opportunistic than Fulham are. That's what I keep getting out of this, Steve.
It's about having a strikers, Ross, I think, because as much as we don't want to touch on the Chris Martin issue, and I know I think he scored his last penalty quite convincingly. I do believe, yeah. I was saying at the game, I think if he had been playing and taken that penalty, I think we would have scored it. And it's a yeah. different having the strikers to put the chances away.
I totally agree with you. And just to clarify, he obviously did score a penalty, but we are missing so many of these. It's really crazy at this point. All right, Giannis, I'm going to go to you before we let the guys break down the match, because I'm going to have each one of them take a half. I want to get your thoughts on the starting 11, and we can talk right now about the Chris Martin situation. Obviously, when you see the starting 11, he's not included. Thoughts that were going through your mind when you saw the starting 11? What were you thinking?
No surprises. Aite is obviously on his way to the African Nations. Clearly, Corley's not going to be, isn't part of the, he's not in his, in Slava's good book. So they put Matt Smith up front, and I didn't have a problem with that. And I have to tell you that, I mean, fitness has always been a question mark against Matt, but he worked hard on Monday. I thought it was a tremendous ovation he got when he left the field. I think he's a confidence lad. And I'm a big fan of loyalty. He's sat very patiently on the bench when game after game, you know, Chris Martin has started, and he's hardly seen any time. He's had every opportunity to sulk, and he hasn't. And when he's been called upon to come out and play, he's done it. Now, on the flip side, I don't want Chris Martin ever to kick another ball for Fulham Football Club again. I don't ever want to see him anywhere than near the stadium or the training ground. I have no time for players who are going to just think they're bigger than the club, because this action is saying, I'm bigger than the club, I can do what I want. And I know there was a similar situation with Clint Dempsey a number of years ago.
Yeah.
Although we never really got to the bottom of what happened there. There's something, I think something different happened there. It wasn't a case of, he was our player. Some stuff was going on with Martin Yol, all that sort of stuff. And to be fair to Clint, he did come back on loan, and he gave everything he had, even though he wasn't the same player. That's but for true. Martin to play as well as he did on Saturday or Friday, or no, just, so the previous game, and then say, right. Bollocks, I'm not playing anymore. And I want to go back. And meanwhile, Steve, useless twonk McLaren, stirring the pot, going, I'd like to have him back. You know, I actually think, guys, the biggest, apart from the transfer window, the biggest test right now is of Mr. Khan, because we're really going to see what sort of an owner he is. He has to back Slava. He has to hold firm and say, you know what? You can't dictate it. You don't have to get paid. You can park your ass and play with the 15-year-olds. I'm disgusted, honestly. Sure. I know there are some issues.
I don't blame you, my friend. It's funny. I don't blame you at all. There's one thing that again rips me more than anything, and that's refusing to play. And that's what you have here. And listen, I've heard the interviews with Savisa. I'm paraphrasing, but I guess Chris Martin is claiming, you know, that he's dealing with an injury, but his medical staff aren't coming up with anything. So again, that's what he's claiming. But I still come back to this, Giannis. There's a lot going on behind the scenes. We don't know exactly. We're not there. No. All I know is that he's not playing, and that's a major problem right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean all of us we're doing the show, and all the fans, and we're looking at this idiot. Really?
What about his team?
That's the other reason. You know what? That's the other reason. Thank you for mentioning that, Russ. As a player,
think about that.
Played the game. If he pulls out and he comes back, fuck off. Get out of it. I'm not talking. Get out of here. Why are you even here? But you see, Slava's got his finger on the pulse. He is, you know, there's obviously a good relationship between he and the players, and he's also going to sense, now look, you know, you can't do what you do, pull that stunt, then come back in the change rooms and start thinking you're going to get respect. You're not going to get respect. And Matt Smith has come out on Monday and put in a really good shift, and he's done it with hardly any time. So kudos to him, and Martin can go back to Ramland, wherever the hell he wants to go to. We don't want him. I don't want him.
Listen, I certainly understand that. Let me just preface this and just reiterate one more time. For whatever reason, and again, you can read it in the head coach reaction, and I've heard interviews as well. Apparently, Chris Martin is claiming to be injured or dealing with something. So that's the fallback on all this. But if I'm reading between the lines, it sounds like to me he's refusing to play. All right, Steve, I want to get your thoughts on this before we break down the match. The starting 11, if you want to comment on the Chris Martin situation, feel free to. But what was going through your mind when you saw the starting 11?
Pretty much. I guess we had all the main midfielders there, but you could almost say that the spine of the team had gone. I mean, on his day, Aiete creates a lot. Giannis has already touched on the fact that we missed him, and the fact that obviously Martin has been an integral part and he was missing. And don't forget that he was touch and go and obviously didn't make it. Kallas was out as well. So straight away, Vyosh, your main centre-back, your only, if not your main striker, and quite a big midfielder who's been chipping in a few goals lately. So straight away, that's your three key players out. And I know chatting to a few Brighton fans on the way into the ground, sort of on the way out from the station, they were sort of, you know, they thought that was quite big as well, the fact that those three were missing.
That's a good point there, my friend. Mm-hmm. All right, over to you, Emilio. Thoughts on the starting 11? And again, if you want to comment on Chris Martin, please feel free to.
Yeah, I think on the Chris Martin, I think let's reserve that maybe for another show. Maybe we can do a spotlight show just on that alone, and you know, that's maybe another discussion. But, you know, we spoke as I was walking to the ground on the game on Monday, Russ, and, you know, I was confident with a strong lineup that we could win the game. And when you told me the lineup, you know, there was a bit of reservation, apprehension on my part. But I think I would have wanted maybe Jokanović just to be a little bit more bolder. And me and Steve were discussing this, I think, at the half time when we did the reflection on the first half of the game, that why didn't Jokanović be bold, do something different, put Humphries on from the start? You know, Brighton were prepared to play against Matt Smith with Lewis Dunk in their centre of the defence, winning every ball in the air. You know, yes, you know, Smith did put in a good shift, didn't get the best of service, mind you, but at the end of the day, I would have tried something a little bit different, try to upset Brighton. So they wouldn't have known much about Humphries. Maybe that would have been a slightly different approach, and maybe going with a more safety first option of Matt Smith. I think that gave Brighton a bit of, you know, the upper hand, in my opinion. So I wouldn't start Matt Smith any game. I still think he should come on as a substitute. You know, he didn't really influence much of the game. He didn't have the best of service, but maybe there was an opportunity just to play into Brighton's hands and be a little bit more controversial and try Humphries from the start. Nothing to lose attitude. And to be honest, he wasn't the most effective when he did come on, but that's a different matter. I just would have been a little bit more bold and brave and said, you know what? come and play your starting full debut here and start from scratch and give their central defence a run around. That's what I would have done. And that's what we commented on before the game had come off.
Right. You know, and I was thinking that too, Emilio. You know, a bold move would have been starting Stevie Humphreys. And, you know, I would have been all for that. That would have been bold. He decided to go with Matt Smith. But as Giannis mentioned, Matt Smith kind of, I think, possibly has earned that opportunity to get back in there. You know, again, he was there before there was Chris Martin, and he did a decent job. So there's an argument to be made for both. I definitely see that. All right, guys, let's now get into this match. And like I mentioned, I want to give each one of you a half just to share your analysis. And Steve, I'm going to start with you. I'm going to give you the first half, and Emilio, I'll give you the second half. So I'm just going to – I just jotted down a couple key moments, but you can just share your overall analysis. Of course, you have the play in the beginning of the match, you know, kind of going back and forth. I believe Brighton had an opportunity early. But then you have the situation in the 13th minute of the penalty for a handball on Bruno, and that leads to Stefan Johansson taking the penalty. And unfortunately, it is saved by David Stockdale. And again, I've watched this several times, and this was not a great effort by Stefan Johansson, a player that I think has been probably Fulham's best player. This was not one of his finest moments, but, you know, it's a penalty. And unfortunately, it was saved by David Stockdale. I have to give Stockdale credit on that. We've seen it before from him. He's actually saved penalties before, so it shouldn't be a shock that he did. But I was hoping for a better result, which didn't go our way. And then we can just talk about the rest of the half. Fulham really dominated the possession overall, but the half ended scoreless. So now I want to go to you, Steve. View of the first half through your eyes. What did you see?
Yeah, I mean, going from the penalty, I definitely personally felt quite nervous when I saw Johansson stepping up. Not because I didn't think he was capable of scoring. I just didn't think he was, as we've already discussed before, I didn't really think he was a penalty taker. I don't really think we have any penalty takers as such. And so I was worried from that point of view. Like you say, the fact that Stockdale kind of made himself big in the goal, you know, he's definitely bulked up since he left us. Again, I've touched on the fact that at times we were slow going forward. And I'll be honest, I think I was saying to Giannis on Twitter the other day, I think that Matt Smith would done what he could as we were chatting about it. He'd done what he could, but I still think he provided little up top, if I'm honest. Obviously, he held the ball up a little bit, but in terms of any real meaningful attempts or anything like that, he didn't offer much at all. And I was always worried that we were going to get caught at the back with Ream playing there, who coincidentally improved second half, but Emilio will probably come on to that. But yeah, I was definitely worried about Ream at the back and our options up top. I definitely thought the midfield ran the show very well.
Okay, very good. I want to go back to you and talk to you about Ream, because one of the things that I noticed is, and they kept talking about this on the broadcast, gentlemen, Jim and Jamie Reed, that they just wish that he would just get on with it, and he, he likes to, you know, be a footballer and tries to show that skill that he has. And did you notice that as well? Did that make you nervous, where instead of maybe just safety first, he was, you know, he was trying to be more of a footballer?
Yeah, there was definitely one moment I remember clearly. The ball came down the our left channel there, right, and in Ream, instead of heading the ball away, I mean, I think Giannis will tell you, from a coaching perspective, the first thing you're going to tell your defenders, if you can, is get your head on it, get it away. Instead, he kind of lets it go over his head, then he's facing his own goal with a Brighton player bearing down his back, and he got himself nearly in all sorts of problems. So that was definitely something I noticed straight away. So he didn't look too comfortable.
Okay, very good. Over to you, Emilio. Let's now go to the second half. Obviously, there's much more going on in the second half. Definitely want to get your thoughts on several things. So I'm just going to mention just some key moments. We can start with a goal in the 55th minute, a great goal by Lucas Payazón, which was set up by Stefan Johansson, and Tom Kearney really, really set him up nicely for this goal that got right in the corner and gives Fulham the lead. One thing that I do want to mention, because I think it's key to talk about, is that the substitutions that Brighton made, I thought were impact substitutions. Bringing on Solly March and especially Tomer Ahmed made a big difference. So I definitely want to mention that. And nothing against the substitutions Fulham made, but I thought these guys made a difference in and what happened in the second half. And then, of course, you have in the 73rd minute, Brighton are awarded a penalty, which is because Ragnar Sigurdsson fouled the Brighton player in the box. But there was a situation before that with Kevin McDonald attempting to get the ball. So we can definitely want your thoughts on that. That led up to the penalty, Emilio. Then Tomer Ahmed takes the penalty, makes it 1-1. Then just 2 minutes later, Lewis Dunk goes on a run, and he follows up a shot by Anthony Knockhart with a header and scores and makes it 2-1. And unfortunately, Fulham would not be able to get that equalizer. They were knocking on the door, but they could not get that equalizer, and the match ends 2-1 in favor of Brighton. But I want to get your overall observations of the second half. And of course, there was another situation in the second half later on where a gentleman, Jim, was going crazy about another shout for a handball in the box. So you can also mention that as well. I can't remember exactly what point that came, but that did come in the second half. All right, Emilio, over to you. Your observations of the second half.
Yeah, before I do that, let's just an interesting stat I just want to sort of just present to everybody. This is around the comparison between, it's similar to the comparison between Brighton and Leicester City of last season. So Brighton this season have scored 40 goals. 26 of them have been in the second half out of the 40. So it's almost, you know, double the amount of goals in the second half compared to their first half goals. So this is a team that plays, lets you absorbs the pressure, a bit like Leicester City, and tries to catch you on the break. That's what they tried to do in the first half. They were trying to get Fulham to push forward. And I think Steve didn't mention the point. I thought Malone and Fredericks had good first halves, came forward, you know, very often. Maybe the final delivery could have been better, but they ventured forward quite freely, and Brighton were absorbing that pressure quite comfortably. The second half, you know, they sort of stepped it up slightly. First 10 minutes, Brighton were on top, and I think it was a sucker punch for them when we scored. Then that came unexpectedly. Brighton started looking a little bit more dangerous and maybe more capable of scoring that first goal. But we caught them on the hop. We got a well-deserved lead. Good build-up, good pass from Kearney, who had an excellent game, and a nice, you know, calm, competent finish from Piazza. So that, you know, 1-0 up, the game was there for the taking. And to be honest, after that, we looked fairly comfortable, in my opinion. You know, we actually were dominant, you know, looking relaxed, passing the ball quite competently, getting forward quite a bit, albeit again, the lack of the final ball could have been better. But sorry, there's this distraction on the phone there. Sorry, I don't know who that is. But I think the key thing from my perspective is, as we sort of took the lead, we sort of regained the possession, regained the confidence. But I thought came a point around the 60, 65th minute, me and Steve was having a debate around bring on Parker to protect that lead. But no, right. We persevered to actually play and being stretched at times. Brighton then had no choice but to start pushing forward. But our legs were a little bit stretched. Some of our players were lacking some pace, and that played into Brighton's hand. That's when they actually they took advantage of that and scored their two goals, you know, around the middle of the second half. But there was an opportunity for Slava to make that change, maybe take off McDonald and protect the defence and protect that one goal lead. But instead, we continued to push forward, and you know, unfortunately, we made a mistake with the goal. And I think there's some debate around whether the McDonald incident should have resulted in a free kick, or he played the advantage. They got a penalty awarded to them. That's a more preferential outcome. Brighton scored from the penalty, and that was 1-1. And then Lewis Dunk had no right to make that run for the second goal, and that resulted in a 2-1 lead. So I think we gave the game away. We could have been a little bit more. How would you say? We should have protected that lead. There was an opportunity to shut shop a little bit, and Scott Parker was raring to go. But unfortunately, we didn't make the right decisions at the right times. Brighton made some technical substitutions to Russ's point, and then, you know, they went off and scored their two goals, and you know, at the end, undeservedly won the game. But it's just disappointing. But overall, there are some positives to take from the game. We did ask questions of Brighton, but that stat I mentioned at the beginning.
Yeah, that's a great stat.
26 of their 40 goals were in the second half of the season. And how many times have they come away from, you know, from a goal behind to win the game? They've done it twice against Birmingham City a couple of weeks ago, if I recall rightly, Preston, North End. So four or five times at least they've come from a goal behind to win games in the second half. And that's what good teams do. Leicester City last season.
It's a great analogy bringing in Leicester City to it, because they found ways to win just like Brighton do. And, it all was 2 minutes. 2 minutes. 2 minutes that changed the match, those two goals.
But Lewis Dunk again, you know, we've, you know, we were supposedly bidding for him two summers ago, 18 months ago, and you saw his leadership qualities in that game. You know, he made that surging run through the middle of the park and had no right to make that run. No one, you know, Luke, I remember on the halfway, I tried to chase him. His legs were like jelly, you know, couldn't even keep up. Lewis Dunks, you know, one north. He just ran northwards. And no one challenged him. Good pass to their forward. Goalkeeper made a save. And there was Lewis Dunk with the momentum to knock on the rebound. And he had no right to make that run. And that was what was disappointing. And if we had fresher legs in the middle of the park and protected that one goal lead, that goal would not have resulted. We would have shut shop. So again, tactically, maybe Chris Hughton did win tactics again head to head.
Very similar matches, Emilio. The last time we played Brighton, really, is there much in between the teams except obviously the score? The score is all that matters. That's in the end. They did the exact same thing. They came from behind again. They found a way to win, and it's very frustrating. But I want to go back to you because I want to go to you, Steve. I want to get your thoughts, and then Giannis, I'll go to you with the full time stats. Get your thoughts on the full time stats, but I want to go back to the whole situation that led to the penalty. Should that have been a penalty? So I'm going to ask you first, and then I want to ask Steve. Should that have been a penalty?
You know, we were debating this with Steve, and I think, Steve, you did a lot of research subsequent to the game to realize what's the actual rules in that situation. Because ultimately, Kevin McDonald did make the foul.
Right.
The referee played the advantage. And my automatic reaction is if the advantage results in a more favorable outcome, then the more favourable outcome takes precedence. So in my opinion, the benefit of playing the advantage then subsequently resulted in a penalty being conceded. Surely that's of more benefit to the attacking team than pulling the ball back and taking a free kick. So I think it's the right decision, whether in the rules of the game and the law says that. But I think, Steve, you did some research and I think it highlighted that the referee did actually make the right decision. But my automatic reaction was, you've played the advantage. You've gained an even better advantage by gaining a penalty. Therefore, they have a right to earn that penalty.
Okay, and I understand where you're going on that. Let me ask you, then I want to go to Steve. Do you believe that was a dive, though?
I had to see the replay to determine that. From where we were sat, it was difficult to do. To me, from a distance, it looked like a penalty. But on close reflection and on close replay, it did look like a dive, yes. But
okay. The
referee has to make a decision on the spot. Yeah. He was in a good position, admittedly, but you could argue that, you know, maybe he wanted to give Brighton something back in return. I don't know, but the referee was very inconsistent throughout the game. Maybe we haven't really touched upon that much. But
no, we haven't.
Some of the decisions were a little bit dubious throughout the game, both for Brighton and for ourselves. And on another, I've seen better refereeing displays in this season, so I think the referee doesn't. Won't get gold medals for his performance on Monday.
Okay, very good. Steve, your thoughts. Was it a penalty? And also, do you believe this was a dive? And also, overall, let's talk about the rest, because that's obviously something that you do. Do you believe, like Emilio just said, that they were inconsistent, that the ref was inconsistent in the linesman?
Okay, so I'll touch on the penalty first. I did do a little research and saw the general consensus among referees was that the obviously the clear advantage is the penalty. Now, for those of you that might have watched the Bournemouth Arsenal game last night, I think Michael Oliver similarly played an advantage that led to Bournemouth penalty where it went down the touchline straight into the box and the guy got fouled, penalty awarded. Pretty much the same scenario, same situation. So it's a more advantage, isn't it? It's more advantageous to give the penalty. So it's almost like giving a goal, I guess, in another sense, unless you're Fulham taking penalties, of course. watching the replay, I think initially I'm with Emilio. Initially, referee's got one look. He's closer, admittedly, but I instantly thought clumsy penalty. Watched the replay on the train station on the way home, and the more and more I watch the replay to this day, I'm convinced he's bought that penalty and he knows the ball's run away from him. And I think he's just hit the floor. And unfortunately, I think as a referee, we've all, you know, from speaking from experience, if you play advantage like that, unfortunately, as much as you want to say it's not, it is in the back of your mind to try and look for an advantage. And that's possibly what subconsciously he's done there. I don't actually think he had a terrible game. I mean, I was moaning a bit during the game. It was just really down. He didn't cost us the game. It was more inconsistent. I felt that at times, you know, he gave an advantage to Brighton when the Brighton guy had turned round, pushed our attacker on the floor. The referee's seen it, the assistant's seen it, and they said play on advantage to Brighton. Now I'm thinking, well, how can that be advantage to Brighton if there's a clear foul on the Fulham player? So I was a bit confused by that and a few other decisions. But on the whole, it's definitely not the referee's fault we lost that game.
Okay. And I'm not blaming the refs either. You know, Fulham need to take care of their business. But I think it's important to talk about it. There was also a situation later, Steve, that, you know, Gentleman Jim was going crazy. And I believe he said that this would be a talking point for a potential handball on Brighton. I don't know if you guys, I believe you guys are on the other end, so you probably did not get a good view of that.
No, I didn't see any of that at all. I mean, if I can just touch back what I was saying about consistency, I think in the second half, a Fulham player got booked for quite a clear tug on the halfway line, breaking up a promising attack. You know, you can't really have any arguments with that. The only thing I did say to Emilio at the time was, what about the one in the first half where the Brighton guys, you know, sort of taken our guy out? It's got to be exactly the same scenario. Right. And that's what we all talk about, consistency. If you're gonna put one in, you know, caution someone for that, you've got to caution the other one as well. And it wasn't consistent. But again, like I say, I don't think he had a particularly bad game. It's just consistency. But who am I to talk? You know, he's a much higher referee than I am.
Well, I like your analysis, you know, your honest analysis of that and the difficult job of being a ref. But I'm with you. Just be consistent. Call both ways, both sides. You know, if you're going to call a penalty, you know, and it's a penalty for, you know, or I shouldn't say penalty, a foul, you know. You know, if it's a foul for one team, it's a foul for the other team. You know, just be consistent. It's a very good point by you, Steve. All right, Giannis, I'm going to go back to you. Let's now look at the full-time stats. I want to get your thoughts on the full-time stats and just your overall thoughts on the match as well. You've already shared some of it, so let me now go through the full-time stats. Possession, 63% to 37% in favor of Fulham. Total shots, Giannis, 14-8 in favor of Fulham. On target, 4-3 in favor of Brighton. That's a telling stat. Corners, this is an interesting one. 10-2 in favor of Fulham. Crosses, 36-10 in favor of Fulham. Tackles, 19-15 in favor of Fulham. Attempted passes, 573-351 in favor of Fulham. Attacking passes, 253-103 in favor of Fulham. Passing accuracy, 81-73% in favor of Fulham. Accurate passes, 468-257 in favor of Fulham. Aerial duels, 18-12 in favor of Brighton. Fouls, 13-8 in favor of Fulham. Okay, Giannis, thoughts on the full-time stats, and do they paint the picture here?
There's one you missed.
I'm sorry, okay.
Number of goals, 1. Because, you know what, it's a broken record, though, Russ. It's a broken record. Because,
I know.
You know, possession dominating, 14 super, passing accuracy is excellent, corners, crosses. Everything's right, and we're creating it. The really good news in all this is we're creating chances. I mean, that's if you're going through a game and you're not getting shots on there, then you've got a different problem. But we are creating chances. The question then becomes, you know, you either come up against a good keeper, and I don't exactly think Stockdale was necessarily at his best on Monday, but you have to finish your chances. And the number of shots, 14, is very pleasing. It's a shot every 6.5 minutes. But as I said at the start of the show, you know, with what has happened over the Martin situation with the transfer deadline window just opening up now, this is where I'm sure Slaven and his coaches already know this, where with especially with Aite gone, they've really got to look now at and the question then becomes, is it a rental or is it not? But looking to get a strong that may be able to get us the extra six points. We're 6 points behind Sheffield Wednesday right now, and getting us the goals that can elevate us into that playoff spot. And so I think right now, until Karras comes back and Mardel and obviously Aite, it's a matter of, okay, where do we need help? And I don't think I think our strength and depth, you could see where it's lacking versus Brighton. I mean, they bought the lads on in second half, and they made a huge difference. Hemed is a good player. Solly March has always played well against us anyway. So, and then you look in their bench and, you know, players like, you know, Stevie Sidwell didn't come on. Jamie Murphy's an effective player. Rob Hunt's an effective player. So, and you look at ours and you go, well, you know, Aidan, Sessegnon, he's fairly, you know, Humphreys is still fairly raw. So there's that. But I think we still need to score goals. And that's why just thinking here with the Twitter buzz, with the strikers have been thrown about. And guess what? Ross McCormack is suddenly reappearing in the shadows because he's not played well at Villa and he's not enjoying it there. And these players think it's green, the grass is greener. But again, a dominant performance like we did down at down in the South Coast. But again, with the chance to put them away, and we couldn't.
That's what it comes down to. I'm glad that you mentioned the stat that matters. And like I started the show with it, the one stat that really matters is 2-1 goals, and that's the bottom line on that. But Emilio, I want to go to you. What stands out to you from the full time stats besides the goals?
So yeah, they're rather emphasising the points that Rhiannis made. Other things to consider there is, you know, the three shots on target. You know, that's not good enough. You know, okay, yes, we were playing the team that's top of the division, only conceded 15 goals all season, but you know, that forward lineup that we had on Monday, or on the and with options on the bench, is a mid-table forward lineup, mid-table to bottom half of the table. That forward lineup would not scare most teams in top teams in that division. Defenders would love to defend against that those type of strike. That's the reason why we only had three shots on target. So we you know, we weren't threatening enough. You know, we had a lot of corners, 10-2, but most of them was just poor delivery. You know, often Johansson didn't find the first man. You know, and then that time, I think towards the end of the game, when we're chasing 2-1 down, and Steve made the point on Mondays, why did we pass the ball short to Fredericks? Just put the ball into the box. Don't waste any time. So, the 10 corners to 2, but we made very few of them count. You know, Matt Smith, you know, I don't recall winning many headers from those corners. So, generally, you know, there were a lot of positives from the game, but the fact that we only had three shots on target, that attack is too light. We know the fact that we haven't got, you know, enough strikers. We need another two. But the longer it takes to get some reinforcements, the less likely we're going to score. Forward lineup is going to score. The midfield, we're relying on our midfield to score goals. Johansson, Kearney, Ayite. Take them out of the picture. Ayite wasn't playing on Monday.
Right.
Where are the goals coming? Johansson didn't have his best game. Take them two out of the equation. All you've got is Matt Smith. Is Matt Smith really going to, you know, worry a Brighton, a Newcastle, a Reading defence? Not really. That's a concern. So it's obvious we lost a game, but we should have been a little bit more bold and played something a little bit different. Why not bring Corley Woodrow in? You know, he's capable of scoring at this level.
Hey!
But what I'm trying to make a point is here is, you know, those forward options are not going to hurt strong defences like Sheffield Wednesday, Brighton, Hove Albion, teams that don't
right.
see that
right.
team.
Right. And, you know, and it's funny because, you know, listen, I don't want to keep on going back to the Chris Martin thing, but it's an issue. And Emilio, before I go to Steve and get his thoughts on the full-time stats, how much of a loss was Floyd Ayite in this match? Now, we knew that he was going to the African Cup of Nations, so it's unavoidable. But was he a loss in this match?
Massive, massive. You know, since he came back from injury, him and Johansson have been outstanding. He just gives – he's a stronger version, a more technically better gifted version than Aluko. Good skill. Can score goals, can assist goals, and is a handful to opposing defenders. So he's a massive loss, and we all worried when we knew that he was going to go to the National Nations Cup that we're going to lose him for a good month. Yeah. So, you know, missing on Monday was a massive loss. If we had him on the pitch, I think what we lacked on Monday, just that final quality ball, that sort of directness. You know, Luka didn't have his best game either, and at times we just felt we were a bit too passive in our play. And had we had a bit more assertiveness and a little bit more positive at times rather than sort of playing like we did in the first few games of the season, sitting back, a lot of possession, a lot of sideways. I just didn't think we were quick enough on Monday. And his accuracy and his qualities and his technical skills and obviously his threat in front of goal as well was missing badly on Monday.
Yeah, I was afraid of that. That's why I wanted to bring it up because I you know, again, I'm just watching the replay. You guys are there, but it just seemed like that we were missing a player like him. You know, that's why I want to mention it. Steve, I want to get your thoughts about the loss of Ayite too. And then also on the full-time stats. Do you agree with Emilio that he was a massive loss?
Yeah, he is a massive loss. We already touched on that before on the three key players missing. I'm going to say it. I've got every time for the African Cup of Nations, but if it's to do with literally letting him play that game and then go away, I mean, what? Their first game isn't for about 4 years. So I don't see why he couldn't have stayed for that one game and then, you know, packed him off the next morning or later that night. And then he'd get a rest when he got there. I'm sure he would have been up for that. And I really can't see why he wasn't allowed to do it. It should be, at times, it should be club before country in this scenario where, again, there's time before their first game. So that's all I really want to say on that, to be honest. Okay. It's just a silly thing. And it could have made all the difference. Yeah, the two stats, Emilio's touched on the corners. Stefan Johansson, usually I like him on the set pieces, but
not great this game.
Either they weren't great or they've been working on it on training. If they've been working on that on training, then they've got to go back and spend all week on it because it was awful. You know, I could have put a better corner in than that, and you can ask the teammates I've played with over the years. All you've got to do is put it on the penalty spot, job done. Aerial duels, they stand out a mile off. Every game, I think, I could be wrong. Michael, tell me I'm wrong, but I think the one thing that stands out all the time is we seem to dominate on most areas, apart from aerial duels, we seem to lose out. Funnily enough, I don't think we really conceded goals from aerial duels. One from a penalty, obviously one's a header, but it's a rebound. So again, that doesn't really count. But yeah, just aerial duels stands out every single match.
Okay, very good. All right, Steve, right back to you. Let's go to full man of the match. Who is your man of the match?
Tough one, actually. I came away from the game kind of quite enthusiastic, but then a little later, a bit deflated, trying to think, well, we'd played well, but we got nothing. And who really stood out in the game? But again, I think I don't really think Kearney put a foot wrong all game. A few good weaving dribbles, obviously sort of neat, intricate passing. So I'd probably give it to Kearney.
Okay, very good. Emilio, man of the match.
Yeah, this is one. There wasn't an obvious candidate for man of the match. You know, Kearney, technically, you know, tried to make most of the running in the game. You know, very left-footed again at times in the game, far too left-footed for his own good. You know, it was overdone at times when it would have been better option to have shot than actually trying to find that intricate final pass. And so I think there was a few times where I was pulling my hair out when Kearney just wanted that extra touch or that final ball when actually he all he needed to do was maybe be brave and shoot from distance like he has done and scored many classic goals for us. But I think I would marginally give it to Kearney, but it wasn't a stroll in the park. I think Fredericks, I think, deserves a mention. I thought he attacked well throughout the game. Malone had, I thought, a very good first half, you know, ventured forward very often, but Brighton gave him the liberty to push forward and absorb that pressure. And if had those crosses been a better quality, he might have got a slightly higher rating. But I think those three, in my opinion, were the best players on the pitch. But only marginally would I give it to Kearney. Piazon, okay. Yes, you know, he got the goal. You know, I was critical of him at half-time. You know, I was, you know, when we did our interview with Steve and Joe on the College Talk half-time review, and felt that maybe Piazon was, again, not influencing anything in the game. We just your touches here and there, the old quality pass here and there. But yes, he scored a good goal, but what else did he do? And, you know, I still need to be convinced about Piazon, but that's maybe another discussion for another show.
Not a problem, my friend. Giannis, man of the match, based on what you watched.
I thought Kearney was magnificent. He's a fantastic little player. And he's so young as well, and it worries me a little bit because I'm sure the scouts and the bigger clubs are taking a look at him and quite rightly so. He's quality. And I thought he ran the show on Monday. It's interesting the comment about, I mean, about Piazon. Because, let's not forget, Piazon's still a young player. But the one thing that I do love about the lad is the passion that he plays with, the intensity he plays with. And it means a lot to wear that shirt. And going back, you know, to near the start of the show, in terms of what it means to wear this shirt, to be part of this, you know, the oldest football club in London. And obviously the pride he has with it. And I love that. Love that about him. And those are the sorts of players that are going to perhaps take us over the top, get us to the level that we want to be at. But I think I really believe it all begins and ends with Tom Kearney. I think he has blossomed you know, to become such a great player. And Johansson, I think, has been a critical part of that in terms of international experience and leadership. So it's good. And these are exciting times for us, even though we lost on Monday. I know we've got the FA Cup coming up on Sunday. And to me, that's a bit of a gimme. It's like a, you know, bollocks, who cares? Because I'm more interested in what's going to happen in terms of players we might bring in, and, you know, reassessing the squad and how things are going to look a little bit different a couple of weeks from now. So should be fun.
Okay, very good. Very quickly, back to you, Giannis. Yes, what's sir. Rates of Visa?
I'm gonna give him 8.5, and I'm sure a lot of listeners will probably think I'm a little mental on this one, but I'm gonna show him a lot of love. I'm just reading this incredible book called The Damn United by David Peace. About when Brian Clough was manager of Leeds.
I saw the movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's a phenomenal book. I mean, and with great acting, Tim Spall and
that's great.
And Brian Clough, as you know, I'm an absolute, you know, he's a hero of mine. But there's a part in this where he talks about, you know, the loneliest person on the planet is the manager on the Sunday morning. You know, it's, you know, you've got the crowd and everything else and the media, but then the stadium empties and there's nothing there. And when you win, it's a great weekend, but when you lose, it's a terrible weekend. And Slava's had a difficult last week to deal with. And the Chris Martin thing would have been disconcerting, to say the least. Fans are angry, quite rightly. The players, well, I don't really care what the player's doing or his agent, but there are a lot of concerns there. And I think he's conducting himself really well. The squad, what Emilio talked about earlier about the maybe, you know, I think Emilio talked about Humphreys coming in. I think he put the right squad out, right team out there. I mean, I'm a big thing on loyalty. I think Smith deserved his chance. I think he gave a good account of himself. And considering what he had playing the best team in the division, and I stand by that, they were, you know, we could have been a goal up if we hadn't missed the penalty. Slava can't take those penalties. We still took the lead, and we ended up losing it. So, you know, 8.5. But with that, I'm also going to link in the way he's conducted himself, the statements from the club this week, which have been very firm, very positive. This is the club. You know, this isn't a train station when you hop on and hop off. I thought that was brilliant. And he's right. And he's absolutely right. And that's directed to the fans as well. As much as anything, it's like, I've got your back, fans. You're here week in, week out. You shouldn't have to put up with a player who thinks this is a drop-in centre for the unemployed. This is not the way it works. So overall, I'd give him an 8.5.
Okay, very good. Over to you, Emilio. Rate Slavica for this match.
I'm probably going to give him a 7.5, really. I think that, well, the positives, I think Giannis touched on that. You know, at the end of the day, he had the Maddle injury to contend with. We lost that at Yeate. He's had to deal with the debacle with Chris Martin. So all of that, I thought he handled himself very amicably, very professionally, and very assertively. So those are, you know, very good positives, in my opinion. Where I think he let himself down, I think I touched on in the show already, is I would have started Humphreys. I would have started something a little bit different, something that Brighton wouldn't have expected, and may have upset them, and maybe have troubled them more than Matt Smith did. I think the biggest fault there is 1-0 up, we reasserted ourselves, we started dominating possession, protect that lead. Knowing that Brighton have got the legs and the strength to come from behind time and time again, and they score most of their goals in the second half, put Scott Parker on. I was saying it to Steve, to the people around me, within 3 minutes, bang, they scored a penalty, and within a minute, they scored a second goal. I think we not only gifted the goal, but we could have actually prevented that second goal in particular. Lewis Dunk would not have had that opportunity to make that run if we had a fresher pair of legs in the middle of the park. So I think he's lost some points from my perspective, not making substitutions at the right time. Okay. And to bring on Cabano after 87 minutes while you're trying to get a point out of the game, too late, in my opinion. So that's where he loses the points. But I'll give him all the credit for maybe putting in a lineup that's, you know, restricted somewhat, because we've got injuries, players on international duty, players who don't want to play for the club. Just maybe proves the squad is not quite as strong as we would like. And that's where we're a couple signings short for being a top six team. But Monday's lineup looked like we're a top eight, top nine team as opposed to a top six team. So not far off. I'll give him 7.5, but he could have maybe earned a little bit more points had he made that tactical change whilst protecting that 1-0 lead. I think he failed to do that. And I think that lost us a game.
Okay. Very interesting take. No, I really like that about talking about that the situation in the second half. Talking about you would have brought on Scott Parker. Very interesting. All right, Steve, over to you. Rate Slavisa.
Yeah, well, I've given him sort of the same as Emilio, really. I've gone for a 7. I could be persuaded to 7.5, purely based on what Emilio said. We've already discussed most of it going through. I think a lot of it, though, was out of his hands. It wasn't his fault. We touched on earlier possibly 3 of his key players. I mean, Maddle could have been a key player had he been fit as well in defence. But having Kallas, Aiete and Martin out, you know, 3 of his key players, I mean, what can he do? You know, his hands are tied, especially up front, with a lack of striking options and also sort of top class defensively that we have. All he could really do was pack the midfield as usual and hope the rest kind of went around with it, I think. So, yeah, again, 7.5, but I'm not blaming it all on Ikanovic at all.
Okay, very good. All right, guys, let's finish up with final thoughts. Emilio, I'll go to you first.
You know, I think, you know, season on season, let's look at where we were 12 months ago, not even 6 months ago, compared to where we know. We got thrashed 5-0 at the Amex back in March, April last year. This year, we narrowly lost 2-1 and we narrowly lost at home by the same score. So we've made significant strides. Top six is still a possibility. We competed, you know, very, very well against probably the best, second best team in the division, if not the best team in the division. So a lot of positives there. We just need maybe a better final ball, bit of better quality, make the possession count more, better crossing from or better delivery from set pieces and from corners. And you know that top six team is up there for grabs, but the teams in that position at the moment are winning more, you know, winning quite consistently. Leeds, Reading, Sheffield Wednesday, those three teams, you know, are winning or certainly not losing games. We're just a little bit more inconsistent and maybe our squad is not quite there yet, but a lot of positives. We narrowly lost, undeservedly lost, and I think we should take some positives because we did have the strongest lineup there, and you know should have got more out of the game. So I'm positive, but we need some signings imminently. We need forwards to score goals, not rely on our midfielders to win you games.
Okay, very good. Over to you, Giannis.
We've been a club since a football club since 1879. And, you know, for all the players that have played, for all the great players, and, you know, when we didn't have seating and we were bottom of the bottom division, and, you know, we all love our club, and we've had some great moments, and recent years it's not been so good. But I've always been a bit of a thing, you know, I've always been a respecter of whoever you support. And we all think our team is the greatest and the greatest club, greatest team or greatest club in the world. And that's why I always have a discomfort level when players disrespect that, because to me it's a kick in the balls to all the supporters. Now, there are supporters out there who would want their ashes scattered at Croydon Cottage or you know, my dad was buried in a Fulham shirt in July. So this is what our club means to us as fans. And anybody that desecrates that by refusing to turn out, I'm very, very angry about this because to me it's an insult to every single Fulham fan and player that's ever represented our club. That's 137 years. And I think Slava's big thing now is to get rid of this toxic this toxic element, so to speak. And get rid of them, just eliminate the issue, and let's move forward as a club. And because it's players like Mr. Martin we don't need, and the players don't need him, the management don't need him, and the fans shouldn't have to put up with him either.
Okay, very good there, Giannis. Okay, my final thoughts involve what's ahead of Fulham. Again, obviously we have the FA Cup match. We're all looking forward to that. But then there are 10 matches. 10 matches that I think can make the difference in the season for us getting the top six. Fulham need to go on a run. Look at the next 10 matches. Look at the fixtures. It's there for them. They need to take advantage of these next 10 matches. As many points as possible, set themselves up. There's a chance to go on a 4-5 game run of victories. They haven't done it. They need to do it in these next 10 matches. That's my final thought, guys. All right. Great show. For Steve, Giannis, and Emilio, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.